Today's Shir is Masechta Bava Metzia, Daf Kuf Dalad. We will begin Be'ezer Hashem Yisbarach on Daf Kuf Gimel Amud Beis at the bottom of the Amud at the Mishnah. It says the Mishnah, Mekabel, Sodom Mechaveroi, if somebody, as we discussed in our previous Shir, there are two ways how somebody could lease a property and pay, and one is to pay Chakiris. A Chakiris is a firm amount that's paid every year. And the other one is a rhesus, where a certain percentage of the yield of that field is given to the owner of the field. So says the Mishnah, Mekabel Sodom Mechaveroi, if somebody entered into this type of arrangement, when a rhesus, a chakira, v'hi beis ha-shalchin, it's a field that doesn't get enough rain water through the rain. It has to be watered. A beis ilam, or it's a field that produces trees. Yavesh hamayin, the nixas ilam, and then the well that's used to irrigate this field dried up. The tree that's supposed to give fruit dried up. Ena menakaloi mechikurei. The cannot deduct from the amount that he is obligated to pay to the owner of the field. And the reason being, because since this wasn't stipulated at the beginning, therefore the halacha is that the deal is a deal no matter what. However, im amaloi, if at the time of the transaction, at the time of the lease, it was said, it was clearly indicated that the field has in it a well. Or was said, it was clearly indicated that it has trees in it. Then the halacha will be, that if the well dries up or the tree is no longer there, since it was clearly indicated that that's part of what's understood, I have entitled to in this field, the halacha will be, that amount, the value that brings to the, that is no longer there, is deducted. Says the Gemara, Hechidami. So let's understand, ask the Gemara, what is the case of the Mishnah? Ilam the Yavishnar Rabba, that if the well from which all the fields in that vicinity get watered from, dried up, ask the Gemara, Amai Eina Menachem Mechakura, why is he not entitled to deduct? Namely, why should he not be able to say, Max Medinazu? This is certainly something that affects everybody. And we're going to learn in Mr. Shem of the Mishnah, Daf Kuf Hei Amabeis, that when there's a situation of a Makas Medina, you are allowed to deduct. Says the Gemara, Amra Papa, what we must explain, the case of our Mishnah is talking about a case, the Yavish Nahara Zuta, that it was the river, that only waters this particular field, Domele, where therefore the landlord could say to the tenant, it's not like there's no water available. It may be a little more difficult to get the water, but there's water available. Bring it with a pail. And therefore, you have no right to deduct from the rent. Amma Rapapa, Hani Tata Masnisa Kamaisa. The first two Mishnayis that were learned in this Perik, Mishkach Sla, the halachas that are taught in those Mishnayis are applicable, Bein Bechachunusa, Bein Bechamunusa. Both if the lease is being paid, as we said at the beginning of Ashir, with a Chakira, that is paid no matter what, or a rhesus as a percentage. The first thing that we learned is regarding that if everybody cuts in a certain way, uproots the tefuah in a certain way, that you have to continue doing that. That applies both by chakiris and a rhesus, because we said you have to follow whatever is the minhag medina. And the second mishnah that said that if you said beis ha-shalchan zu, and the river dried up, so that's also by a rhesus or by chakiris, because it's not the if it's not the way I leased, I don't have to pay it accordingly. However, mikan ve'elech, the further mishnayos and that we're going to learn in our perek, isa bekablunusa, blessa bechekenusa, some of them, the halachas that will be learned, will only be applicable in an aresis arrangement, not in a chakiris arrangement, and some of them, isa bechekenusa, blessa bekablunusa, will only be applicable in a charikira relationship, not in a kablona situation. Even though, points out Tosfos, that one of the halachas that we've learned previously is kishem shecholkin betfuah kach cholkin betevin bekash, that just like they divide the produce, they also divide the grain, they divide the straw, and that halacha that only applies by rhesus and not by chakiris, says Tosfos, since the most of the halachas that are taught in that Mishnah apply both Tarisus and Chakiris, that's why the Gemara is comfortable in saying what it just said, that all these halachas apply in both situations. We learned in the Mishnah that if he said, Chakoli said the Beis Shachin Zeh, so they specified this field, and this field has in it a well, and if it dried up, then you could deduct. Says the Gemara, Vamai, why does the tenant have a right to do so? Lemele, why can't the owner of the field say, Shema ba'alma amrilach? This, that we use the word Beis HaShalchin on this field, is not because the field is a Beis HaShalchin. It's being used in a borrowed sense. It's being used in the sense that it's a way, it's being used in a way to describe of the field, to identify the field, but not to make that the presence of the well is required to have this field for this lease to be effective. And the Gemara brings a raya that this is a valid claim. Milay Tanya, for have we not learned in a brisa? I'm selling you a property that is large enough that you could plant a base kar of tefuah. Even though there's only room that will produce a half of a kar, higiyoy, the transaction is valid. He could say, I didn't mean that to say that I have to provide you with a property that's large enough to produce a base kar. I use this only as a way of identifying. Who the miskri base kar? As long as this property is indeed called a base kar, even though it's not large enough to be able to produce a base kar, it shouldn't make a difference. So the Rishonim ask, why isn't there a simple way of determining what really is the case here? They're looking at the price that was paid. Obviously, the amount that's paid to lease a field that could produce a base kar is much more than the amount that's paid for a field that could produce a chatzi kar. So why don't we just look at the price that was paid as an indication what was meant? So Tosfos, Rabbeinu Peretz answers, as we've learned earlier in our Masechta, since there's a halacha ein ano b'karkos, when we speak about pricing of different items and objects, that we spoke extensively in our Masechta about ano overcharged, undercharged. But we learned by karka, by real estate, that is really not the halacha. And therefore, since that there is no ano b'karkos, we can't say that there's a firm price by leasing property that it could be used as a determining factor to know what is meant. And therefore, the halacha is that wouldn't be a way of making the determination. Karma, similarly, says the Gemara, if somebody says, Karma ni maichaloch, I'm selling you a vineyard, abishem begafanim, even though there's no grapevines in that property, the transaction still stands. Shleimachal al-shma, he only meant to sell him the name. And this is v'hu d'maskari karma, this property is called a karma. Similarly, if somebody says, Pardis, I'm selling you a pomegranate field. Abish ein by remyonim, even though there are no pomegranates in that field. Hegiyai, the transaction is valid. Shalei machala el shmo, he meant to say the name. Vudumiskari paradis, and that was called the paradis. And the Shita quotes Rabbeinu Yonason, how do these things happen? That a place is called a karma, a vineyard, and there's no grapevines. And it's called a paradesa, and there are no pomegranates. So he says, the way these types of names come about is that there might have been grapevines in this property at one time. And there might have been pomegranate trees in this property at one time. And therefore, since that's how the name was, they got these names. And even though it changed, the realities of what this field produces changed, the original name stuck. Alma, so, but back to the Al Gemara, the question the Gemara is posing. Alma Amale, the seller could say to the buyer, Shma ba'alma amrilach, I used the name by which this property is called. So Achanami, why not in the property of, why not in our Mishnah, when somebody said, I'm renting you a base of Shalchan, even though there is no well there, it dried up. Namely, Shma ba'alma amrilach. I only meant that that's the way this field is called, not because it necessarily has a well. Answers the Gemara, Am Shmuel Loikasha. Had Amalei HaMachka L'Chayker. In a case where the landlord said to the tenant, that this is what I'm renting you, so we could say he used this wording no more than as a means of identifying this field, not to mean that this field necessarily has this in it. Had Amalei HaChayker L'Machker. But when the person who's leasing, renting the property, speaks to the person who owns the property, it's clear that he meant that I expect that there should be a well in this property. And the Gemara explains why. When the landlord uses this wording, it's Shema Ba'al Mamrele. He's only using it as a way of identifying. But when the tenant speaks to the landlord, it's obvious that the halach is that he's ma'ak peida, that this is something that was important to him, and the halach is that then if it doesn't have what was agreed upon, that's only then he could deduct what from the price that they had agreed upon. But Duran points out that this halacha that was saying that under these circumstances the tenant, the lessee, could deduct, it's only in a case where we're learning in our perek, chakiris arisis. But if somebody buys a property, and after you buy a property, the well dries up, and now you'll come with a claim mekachtos, then you don't have a claim of mekachtos. If something unfortunate happens after the deal is consummated, that's what business is all about, that you buy something, and there were certain expectations that will happen in the future, And those expectations are not realized, and therefore, under those circumstances, you have a right. You have no right to say, "Well, I didn't mean that." However, in the case that of chakiris and arisis, explains Duran, it's very different. The reason a chakiris and arisis are different is because it's not like the person who sells me a property. When he sells me the property, he no longer is involved in this property. He's finished. He gets paid and he goes. When I, on the other hand, do chakiris and arisis, the owner of the property is still very, very much involved in the future. The reason why he's very, very much still involved in the future is because he will be getting a share of the fruit. And since he's going to be getting in the future a share, he's going to continue in the future getting a share of the fruit, that's why he's entitled, that's why their relationship means that if the terms aren't met, the deal is called off. Ravina has a different approach. Idi, both the cases are referring to a case, Damalei HaMachta L'Chayker, that it was the landlord talking to the tenant. Midakamer, the difference is, Hakarli saw the Beis Hashalchan Zeh, when he said the word Zeh, Mechlal the Koy Begavah Askinen, that he's in that he's standing in the field. So if he's standing in the field, so we know what field they're speaking about. So Beis HaShalchan Lamali Lameima, why was it necessary for him to use the word Beis HaShalchan? We know what they're talking about. They're standing in the property that they're working on. The Kamalei, says the Gemara, what that represents, the Kamalei, what he meant to say was, Beis HaShalchan Kedekai Mahashta, the property as it is now. And if now there is in it a river, and ultimately a well, and ultimately it dries up, so then obviously the deal is off. But if he didn't use the way Sashalchan, if he wasn't standing in the field, so then he could argue that the reason I used the word Beis HaShalchan was only as a means of identification, not as a means to show what I really meant. And therefore, in such a case, the halacha will be that if you use the word Beis HaShalchan, won't make a difference. Says the Mishnah, Makabel Sada B'Chaveroi, if somebody entered into an arisus relationship for Vira, and he didn't work on the field, and therefore there is no produce to give. Shaman Oysoi Kamarui Lassus, we evaluate how much it would really normally produce for Nois and Lob. And of course, Rashi points out that this halacha that we just spoke is only applicable by an arisus, because the way arisus works is that I have to give you a percentage of what the field produced. But if I didn't give you if I didn't work and there won't be a percentage, that obviously is not what you will be the case. Moreover, the Nemuk Yosef says that even by Chakiris, where I'm going to have to pay you no matter what, even though I'm going to have to pay you no matter what, suggests the Nemuk Yosef, the landlord could stipulate, I want my field to be worked on, and therefore, even if by Chakiris, then he would have to work on the field. Shekach Kaisvaloi, because says the Mishnah, the way it written in the lease agreement by an arisus, if I will leave the field fallow and not work on the field, then a shalim b'meteva, I'm going to have to pay as if it produced great produce. There's two ways of learning b'meteva. One is that I have to pay as if it produced great produce, and the other way is to learn that I will pay you what I owe you. I will have to pay you b'meitav. Not only will I have to pay you, but I will have to pay you with the best. So the Chishukei Chemed has a very interesting question. He says, if somebody had an apartment to rent, and a tenant approaches him and says, I want to rent this apartment from you, and please don't rent it to anyone else. And because he said that, the landlord was very satisfied, and he didn't anymore look for a tenant for his apartment. And then this tenant comes and says, I changed my mind, and I don't want to rent this apartment from you. Can the landlord say, well, I had a real loss because of you, because I stopped looking for tenant, and had I known that you're going to back out of the deal, I would have started looking for a tenant during this time. And this question is really connected to Machloikus Rishonim, he suggests. He says that the Torah in Choshe Mishpat Simen Shin Samach Gimel quotes the opinion of the Ramah that if I bought from somebody a place, a chotzer, and I didn't live in it, since I promised that I'm going to rent it, if I don't, I owe you. The Rosh says that I potter. And why does the Rosh say that it's potter? So he says that this is not considered a direct hezek. It's not considered a direct damage. It's more considered of a indirect damage. But the Chishukei Chemed says that la'aloch la'maisa, wherever somebody did something like this, and the damage is clear that it was serious, you lost the opportunity to collect rent all these months, I will be held responsible. A similar question that he discusses, if somebody rented an apartment for someone else, a furnished apartment, and this person in his furnished apartment had flower pots, and the tenant agreed to water the flower pot, The question is that will I, and now the flowers, the plants died. And the question is, will I be held responsible? He says that yes, that the, this is if that, this is what we just learned in our Mishnah, that if I stipulated that I'm going to do something and I didn't do it, if I stipulated that I will do something and I didn't do it, then the halacha is I'm going to be held responsible. Not only that, but he says, let's say there's a home that has many, a condominium, a co-op, they have many people living in that home, and they agreed that there's a garden in the field, a garden in front of the house, and that every month, every week, whatever arrangement they have, someone else will be responsible to take care of the, field. So he says the halacha is that in such a situation, if a person was negligent and he didn't do what he was supposed to do, he says under those circumstances and there's damage to the garden, the person who was negligent and did not do what he was supposed to do will be held responsible for not having done what he was supposed to do. Begins the Gemara. Rameya says, Hayadarish Lashon Hedyot. Rameya would understand what people wrote. The Tanya, the Brisa says, Rameya Omer, that if he wrote into the agreement, Im Oiver V'loy Eved, if I won't work the property properly, says the Gemara, Shalom Mativai, I'm going to have to pay the best. And since he wrote that, he has to follow his agreement. So the way Tosfos Rit explains the Gemara is if the tenant, the Oris, had not written this, he wants to suggest that maybe it would not be considered an act of hezek. It would only be considered a grama ben zaken. But because he put this in, he's obligated. So of course Tosfos asks the obvious question: what does the Gemara mean that Rameya Hayodorish Loshen Hedyot, and we take what you say seriously? Of course we take what a person says seriously. Why does the Gemara have to explain this? So there are a number of answers given. One answer is given is that what the Gemara means to say, three primary turutzim, that this is not considered an asmachta. We often discuss in our shiurim the halacha of an asmachta. Says Tosfos that Rameya is saying that this arrangement is real. What's meant when I say it's real obligation, and it's not just an asmachta because the person was certain that he's going to do what he agreed to do. That's one pshat that I saw. Another pshat that I saw is that what the Gemara means to say is that normally you have to, if you want to have a stipulation, you have to speak out the stipulation. Here, what we're learning is that even if the stipulation was not clearly articulated, it's still considered obvious that this is what the person meant to undertake, and therefore he's obligated to follow this, even in a case where it wasn't said and it wasn't written. A third pshat that I saw is that normally when we speak about tnoim, about stipulations, particularly the opinion of Rameyer, is that when we speak about stipulations, there are very clear halachas in stipulations. You have to have a tanai kofel, you have to have tanai koid l'maisa. This is such a strong, obvious requirement that all the halachas that are said by tanoim, that are normally said by tanoim, are not applicable here. Says the Gemara further, Rabbi Yehuda Yedar Shloshen Hedyot, Netanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Adam may be kavan asha al ishtai. There's certain kabbonis that the carbon, the type of carbon you bring, is dependent on your financial situation. If you can afford, you bring an animal. If you can't afford, you can bring birds, or sometimes even a carbon mincha. And it's applicable by a carbon yoledes when a woman had a baby, or when somebody's a mitzvah and they became tahor. And now the question is, if somebody's married to someone who could afford to bring an animal. And what kind of carbon does his wife bring? His wife brings a carbon usher, and there's no point that, well, she doesn't have money. The reason being, because the husband, says the Rosh, is obligated to give the wife what she needs, and it has to be according to the financial status of the husband. And since if the husband could afford it, the wife also gets the same obligation. And the Medrash says, the Pasuk says, Zois Torah Sheboi Neged Tzaras. Why does it say Sheboi Neged Tzaras if it's the wife that maybe was the Metzora? Because Ishtoi Kegufa. And the Briskerov quotes his son, Raberl Soloveitchik, who has a very interesting explanation. He says, what does the Torah say are the circumstances when somebody doesn't have to bring a carbon usher, when somebody doesn't bring the carbon of a wealthy person? So the Torah says the words, Ashlei Siga Yadai, Ashlei Tasik Yadai, you can't afford. A woman who's married to a husband who is Tasik Yadai, who is able to afford this carbon, so we can't call her an individual Ashlei Tasik Yada, and therefore the carbon usher has to be brought. The Cain, Kol Carbon Shei Chayeves, any carbon that she's obligated to bring, even a carbon which is not a carbon oil of a yared, the halach is he has to provide her with the carbon. Shekach kaisalach the chrayis to isleich, any obligation you have, alai mekadem chenoy, I have to accept that obligation. However, the Rishonim all point out here that this is only speaking about a carbon that the Torah obligates her to bring. But let's say a woman decides to make a neder or a nedava. She decides to donate a carbon. So there, the husband doesn't have to provide for it. And the reasoning is quite simple. Because if the husband is going to have to pay for it, so a wife can impoverish her husband by keeping on making nedarim and nedavas that she's going to bring kabbonis, and her husband's going to have to fulfill those obligations. So all the kabbonis that we're speaking about here are only kabbonis that are obligatory. Hillel hazakan aydar shloshen hagit. The Tanya Anshe Alexandria Makachmas Nishasayim, they used to marry their wives. V'shnas k'nasos l'chuppam, and when they were about to take them to the chuppah, b'ayin achem v'chaytum nasam mehen. Other men would take these women for themselves. V'bikshecham lasis b'nei mamzerim, and Chazal were concerned that we should identify the children of these marriages as mamzerim, because this woman was really married to someone else. Amalahem Hillel Azokin. So Hillel Azokin said to them, and these children who are being identified as mamzerim, he said to them, Hevilu ksubas iman, bring me a copy of the ksuba. Matzah shekos behen, and it said in the ksuba, l'chtansi l'chupa havle l'intu, only after chuppah are you considered nesuos. Here there was no chuppah, and therefore you were never considered married. And since you were never considered married, loy also b'nei mamzeim. Rav Shua ben Karcha, hayudar shloshen hadyi. The Tanya Rav Shua ben Karcha oimer, hamavas chaveroi. If somebody lends money to someone else, and the loiva did not pay in the proper time, and now the malva, being upset, wants a mashkin from the loiva. So he asks the loiva to ask the shliach bezin to bring a mashkin. Loiva meshkimenu, he shouldn't take a mashkin yois mechayvay. He shouldn't take a mashkin which is worth more than the amount of the loan. She kach kaisalei, because when the malva is going to give back the mashkin to the loiva, because the halacha is, the Torah says, vim ish onihu leisishke ba'avoytei hasha tashav leis avoyt. The law is that if somebody takes a mashkin, takes security from someone else, and the person who I take from the security from needs on a regular basis what I've taken from him, needs on a regular basis what I need that he, what I took from him, I have to give it back to him to use it. And what since he keeps on returning it to the loiva, kach kosvoi, the loiva wrote, tashlumcha dislach gabay, the amount that I owe you, kol kabadachi, is equal to the mashkin, and now if it's equal to the mashkin, if that's what the loiva writes, and if the malva will be able to keep the mashkin, he'll end up getting more than the loan was worth, says the Gemara. So how is this problem avoided, that if the loiva will pass away and the malva will keep the mashkin, it'll turn out that the malva will get more than the loiva owns him? Tama de kasloi hachi, only because it was written in that way. Halai kasv hachi, had they not had this declaration like Kanya, says the Marva Amar Abiyachan, and Mishkoinai, Veheshaloi is a mashkin, if the malva gives back to the loiva the mashkin, or mace, and then the loiva dies, Shamtim al gavabonav, he could take it back from the children. So we see that under all circumstances, he's entitled to the mashkin. Says the Gemara, Ahanik sivil agaroin. What accomplishes is that if the loiva had not obligated himself in this way, he would be, the malva would lose the depreciation of the mashkin, that it went down in value. This prevents to freeze the amount. What they used to do, as we know, they brought into the marriage nichsei melug, nichsei tzayim barzel. Nichsei melug are property that really belongs to the wife. Even throughout the marriage, the husband just gets the payris. And nichsei tzayim barzel are assessed at the time of the marriage. And what they used to do is that some places, the husband, the wife, would bring in these nechasim, would bring these assets into the marriage, and they were written in how much they were worth at the time of the marriage. And when, if the marriage terminates because the husband passed away, rechman tzlan, or divorced her, rechman tzlan, she gets back according to the amount that's written in the ksuba. And says, Rabbi Yossi, goyva kamilva. So just like if we have a loan document, so whatever amount is written into the loan document is the amount that the loiva has to give to the malva. Similarly, here, that would be the amount that the husband would have to give, the husband's estate or husband would have to give to the wife. But in certain places, in order to make everything sound better and look better, they would double whatever it's worth. So even if the wife brought in assets of $1,000, they would write that the assets are worth $2,000 to make it look more attractive. So there, when if there's a case where the wife is going to be collecting the assets, goyva mechza, she'll only be entitled to 50%. Nahar Bloi, there was a person that lived in the place called Nahar Bloi, that he would take only a third, because in where he lived, they would try to even put in more into the ksuba, again, all to make it look l'kavod isha, to show how significant and important she is, and how many assets she brought into this marriage to make everything look more attractive. So if they wrote the ksuba with three times the value, so when if the wife is collecting, she only gets a third. Merema magbin amishvacha, the merema that would collect the amount that's written, even though it's written more than it is really worth. Amalei Ravina Ramein Vatanya Lichbol, but we just learned that if the ksuba is written in a way that the assets are over-evaluated, you don't get only according to the real value. Amalei Ravina Lameimer Vatanya Lichbol Goyva Machza, says not like Kasha. Hard economy in a case where there was a kinyan, so even though then you go according to what the number is. Had the loy karnimine, if there was no kinyan, then you go what the true value is. Ravina Meshabeach v'ksiv l'barte, Ravina, when he would marry off his daughter, he would write double the value of what it was really worth, that it was of the assets that his daughter was bringing into the marriage. Amalei nicknamed him Nar. So he said, they told him, make a kinyan. He says, I'm only overstating the value of these assets because there's no kinyan. But if we're going to make a kinyan, then I won't overstate the value of the assets. They'll be written as they're really worth. If somebody said to his yarshim, When a person was close to passing away and he was concerned about his family, so he wrote, I want you to write into the ksuba, I want you to give 400 zuz to my daughter as a ksuba when she gets married. How do we understand what he meant? Do we say that he meant that he meant to give her 400, but the ksuba is going to have doubled amount, as we just learned, as it was common to double the amount that's written in the ksuba, and that's why they had a tamnimeya? Or do you mean 400, which is already after the amount that it's normally doubled, and therefore he only meant to give 200 zuz? Amar Ravashi. So how do we understand what the father meant? He's unfortunately no longer here to be asked. Aravashi, Chazina, we see. If he said, give her Abba Mezuz, so we say, Dina Tamni Meya. We mean to give 400, that will be written into the Ksuba as 800. But if the wording that he used was the Amr Ksuva, if he said right into the Ksuba, Ksuva Abba Mezuz, what he meant to say is that the amount that will be stated in the ksuba is 400, which in reality means only mas, means only 200. Ikad amri, amar vashi chazinan. I amar l'ksuba, if he said that this is what should be done in the ksuba, the ksuba amezuz, then obviously what he meant was l'ksuba soy, he meant for what she could collect. And therefore you write 800 and she collect 400. However, if you use the word big subasa, what he meant was Abba Meizuz, that right in the ksuba 400, but I'm only giving dinim asin. V'loihi. But says the Gemara, loishna dama l'ksubasa, it doesn't make a difference if the word l'ksubasa was used. V'loishna big subasa, Abba Meizuz, that you put into the wording of the ksuba 400 zuz, which means that you're giving masin 200, unless Ad Amar Lav Stamba, unless he didn't use the word ksuba. If he didn't use the word ksuba, so in the ksuba, we understand, as we've been learning through our shir, that the numbers are doubled. When you just say something and you don't connect it in any way to what it's going to say in the ksuba, there it certainly means that this. If I say a number, I mean that number. Hahu gavi de kabel ara mechavrei. Somebody accepted to be an oris on somebody else's property. And Omer, imavirilach, if I will leave the field not worked on, yavinilach alfa zuzi, I owe you 1,000 zuz. And now, what happened was, oivetlosa, there was a third of the property that he didn't use. So now the question is, will he owe him 333 zuz for that third, or not? Omer nadoi, dinu de yavle tlas mesu tlasa tlasa tlasa. He said he's going to give 1,000 for the whole field. So a third is only, a third is, if it was left not work, you'll owe 333. Rav Amar, HaRava have holds, Asmachtihi, he never really meant, and as we discussed in the previous Shurim, the definition of an Asmachta, particularly according to Rava, is when somebody is going to accept upon himself a penalty which exceeds the amount of the loss. And here, it's certainly a third, leaving the third unused is an asmachta. Ask the Gemara if we consider that an asmachta, or the Rav Maishna Mahadu Tanan, why is this different than somebody who said, Im oivir v'loy evid, if I'm going to leave the field and now work on it, ashal v'metoiva. We learned in the Mishnah that that's considered a valid stipulation. And when we learned the Mishnah, nobody suggested, well, that's only an asmachta. Says the Gemara, hos like a gozim. There it's not considered an exaggeration. It's something that he accepted upon himself because he didn't work on the field. Our Gemara is speaking about Kivin Dama Milsa Yisaelta, that he, in our Mishnah, the person just said, if I don't do what I'm supposed to, I'll reimburse you. Here, he spoke about the El of Zuz. So therefore, it's guzma ba'alma de kagazim. It's clearly wording which represents a exaggeration. And therefore, since it's considered an exaggeration, the halacha says that you don't have to follow it. It's considered an asmachta. The Tshuvas Rab Ha'alim discusses a case where somebody promised a bill collector $25 for successfully collecting a certain debt from one of his credit from one of his debtors. The bill collector succeeded in collecting 80% of the debt and wanted to be paid. Reuven said that I don't have to pay you, right, because you didn't do the job. You were supposed to collect the entire debt. You only collected 80%. The Rab Ha'alim says, based on what Nahadoi says in our Mishnah, where this person promised 1,000 zuz if he didn't work the field. If he didn't work a third, he owes a third. Here too, says the Rab Ha'alim, this bill collector is entitled. If he collected 80%, he's entitled to 80% of the $25. He's entitled to $20. The Mishkanus Royim discusses a case where somebody promised somebody else $100 if he could teach his friend the entire Seder Moed by heart. After teaching it to him, it was determined that he only knew 80%. So the person says, okay, I only did 80% of the work, give me $80. Just like Nadoi says. The Mishkas Aroyim says it's not the same. He says, because if I don't work the field, so the part that I didn't work, you, the owner of the field, had a loss. The part that I did work, you didn't have a loss. And therefore, the loss is prorated according to what I did do versus what I didn't do. Somebody who's supposed to learn the entire Seder, that's an extraordinary accomplishment, to be able to learn the whole Seder Moed. Learning 80, and for that you deserve a significant payment. Somebody who didn't learn the entire Seder, yes, it's an accomplishment. Every Mishnah that one learns is an accomplishment, but it's not the same level of accomplishment as somebody who learned entire Moed and learned entire Seder. And therefore, under those circumstances, one can make the argument that I don't owe you anything. Says the Gemara, Hu Gavra, the Kabbal Ara L'Shem Shemi. Somebody agreed to plant in the field sesame seeds, which is more valuable than chitin. And the Oris did not do as was agreed upon, Zorachiti. He planted chitim, but of the chitim k'shem shemi. But that year, the chitim were expensive, and they were equal in value. Sover kanal meima, the machle kach shtarav. The owner of the field has a right to deduct from the oris part of the payment, part of the what the oris is supposed to get, because chitim deplete the land more than the shumshamin deplete the land more than chitin. And therefore, Rav Kahana said that the Baal Karka, the owner of the owner of the field, says that we have to take in consideration that I benefited, that my property did not get depleted. Amalei Rav Ashi Kahana, Amri Incha Kach Sha'ar V'Lekach Shemara. People say, I would prefer that my property should get depleted and not me. The person says, I wanted sesame seed, and therefore you didn't do what I said, and therefore that even though maybe financially what you did for me accomplished the same, but that's not the only consideration that we should be thinking. That's not the only consideration that we should be thinking about, which is an interesting question that I saw. The Sefer Mishnah Torah discusses a situation where somebody gave his stockbroker direction to buy a certain stock. And the stockbroker did not do as he was told. He bought a different stock than he was instructed to buy. But what happened was that other stock that he purchased ended up doing much better than the stock that he was told to buy. So is the stockbroker entitled to his commission? So the halacha is that the customer has a right to say that I don't want to pay you. Because just like Algemar said, if you don't follow instructions, even though I benefited by you not following the instructions, I don't have to pay you. Who gave the couple arrow to Shumshmi? Somebody accepted property to do Shumshmin. Zorechiti. In this case, it was even better than Shumshmin. That the owner should give the Oris reward for what he did. Was it he that made that success? Did the property not contribute? And therefore he doesn't have to pay. The halach is he doesn't have to pay the extra. He could say it was my property that caused this benefit, and I don't owe you anything.